Welcome back to the Power Hour. We're so glad to be joined again by Daniel Estill in a follow-up interview on his fantastic book. And really, ladies and gentlemen, this is, if I gave five-star reviews, this would be a five-star one. In the Shadows of a Presidency, Daniel Estill. Really, it's difficult to, one, it's difficult to write any book. Two, it's very difficult to write a book about such nuanced, complicated subjects and bring them down in such a concise way that's just so powerful. And that's what this book does. If you want to know the dynamics behind the scenes going on right now, this is your book, In the Shadows of a Presidency. Daniel Estill, of course, written The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, other Tavistock Institute, other books. Very happy to welcome him back. Daniel, welcome back to the Power Hour.
It's great to be back. Thank you so much for the invitation again.
The first question, we're going to get into this elections. I think it's going to be very important. I want to go over this again because I rack my brain about this. Our listeners do. Please explain to us from your perspective, what exactly is Donald Trump? Who exactly put him in? What are the, are there sides going on? I mean, in some ways he seems like the same old thing. In other sides he seems like a radical departure. Is he an American? Is he on our side? All this. What are we looking at?
It's a very good question. It's easy to understand your question. It's so difficult to explain in a few words. Trump is not a person. By that I don't mean he's an extraterrestrial. He's a project of one part of the global elite. Back in 2014, that's 2.5 years before Trump became president, our intelligence unit, Russian intelligence, we were playing with different scenarios for the upcoming U.S. elections. And needless to say, we needed to think out loud as to who might be next president of the United States. And we were playing with three different scenarios. One was Donald Trump, the other one was Rand Paul, and the third was Bernie Sanders. What we basically knew as a point of departure is that no one on the liberal banking financier side, these are the people who destroy the world economy, these are the people who play with numbers on the computers, these are the people who don't produce anything, these are the people behind Hillary Clinton. We basically had it absolutely clear that none of these people would win the elections because the economy has collapsed. And this whole model, which is based on Bretton Woods, an agreement signed in 1944, was based on infinite growth on a finite planet, something that basically came to an end. There was no more growth in the world once the Soviet bloc became part of the global liberal banking financier bloc. So there were nowhere to expand. So the question of finding an alternative to these people. And so we had these two individuals. Rand Paul immediately was discarded because he simply didn't have the economic acumen to play in the big leagues. And we're basically left with Donald Trump, who's a right-wing conservative, and Bernie Sanders, who's a left-wing conservative. And most of us thought that someone like Trump would win because he's a typical individual, who you want in there to get things done. He may be uncouth, he may be a lot of different things, but again, he's perfect for the situation, the collapse that we're living through right now. They needed someone like him to strong arm his ideals, through on a supranational level. Although Bernie Sanders would have won had it not been for all the shenanigans in the Democratic Party. And so, when we realized that someone like Donald Trump would win, it was a question of understanding how the entire dynamic would play itself out. Because again, as I said, Donald Trump is not a person. He is a project. And people who say that he is all these different things, they're absolutely wrong because he knows exactly what he's doing. He defeated 16 or 17 candidates in the Republican Party, defeated Hillary Clinton, and basically he went up against mainstream media, the intelligence agencies, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, Washington establishment, the Hollywood intelligence agencies, the Rockefellers, the Soros, again, the liberal banking financier, Wall Street crowd. And he defeated most of them, or he's in the process of defeating most of them. And a lot of people who are saying that he's probably going to get killed the same way that John F. Kennedy was killed simply don't understand that Kennedy didn't have anyone behind him except for his daddy's money. Whether it's Donald Trump is a project. He's what we call black international. By black international, I mean old European landowners, the old aristocracy, the royal families, the Vatican, the royal family of England, the Rothschilds. We're talking about city, not London, but city, the epicenter of the British Empire, Singapore and Hong Kong, the city-states. These are the people behind the candidacy of Donald Trump on a supranational level. And again, if you only understand Republicans, Democrats, Americans against the Russians, you know, the world that you see on television, none of what I'm saying makes any sense. But I repeat, Donald Trump is an alternative to a model which is now dead. And that model is Bretton Woods model, which basically was created in 1944 as a way to obviously expand America's influence in the world. That model today is dead. And Trump came in, and Trump's objective as the president is to dismantle, destroy petrodollar and to come up with a new economic model, something which is very difficult to do because you can't come up with a new Bretton Woods or a new Yalta, you know, the same way you can order a hamburger in McDonald's. It takes a lot of time and a lot of agreements between a lot of different countries. And we don't have that time because the world is on the verge of economic, financial Armageddon collapse. And so it's a question is, how much can be done to save the world? Because, again, it's a war between two different models. If, beginning in 1944, the war was between the capitalist bloc and the socialist bloc, and in 1991, with the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact collapsed, it basically became one world global bloc of liberal banking financiers. Because that model doesn't work anymore, today the war, the fight to the death, is within the capitalist bloc between the industrialists, which represent about 30% of the world's finance. These are the people who could build something, improve the lives of people per kilometer of space against nature, and the financiers. These are the Wall Street crowd, the Clinton crowd, et cetera, who are against Donald Trump. And they play with numbers on a computer. They don't produce anything at all. So the fight is to the death. Because if before you had enough for everybody on the supranational level to basically divvy up the world into bits and pieces, this is for you, this is for me, etc., now there is only enough for one. It's like in the film The Highlander. Only one can survive. And what we're seeing right now on the global stage, because there is a reason why the media, the mainstream media, wants to paint Trump as a lunatic. He's saying that, you know, he's fighting against Canada, he's fighting against NATO, against World Trade Organizations, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, Federal Reserve. These are all our friends. No, these are not our friends. These are the enemies of humanity, and the enemies as a consequence of Donald Trump, because he's the alternative economic project. So these right. upcoming elections right, are basically going to decide the future of humanity.
Oh, my. Okay, let me interject here. Let me try to summarize for a second and then a follow-up question. That was, I mean, that was a heavy 3 minutes, 5 minutes you just laid on us, Daniel. Let me summarize here. So you're saying, you say the elite, or a lot of people say elite. I say syndicate because I don't think they're elite. I think they're scumbags, but that's me. I call them the syndicate. The syndicate, within the syndicate, they see the world in two different ways. There is a break-off. In that break-off, the people who actually create things, the industrialists, more Rothschilds, old banking, versus this new money Wall Street made up out of nothing Rockefeller clan, they see a new way, that there must be a new way. They don't want to implode everything. In that, they think, okay, screw Hillary Clinton. We want a candidate like Donald Trump to enact this new way, a new dollar system, a new economic model so we can progress forward. Still controlling, but a new model away from destruction. Am I right so far?
You're right mostly, but there's a couple of minor corrections. The liberal banking financier Bretton Woods model worked as long as it gave, produced benefit. And it produced benefit for these people as long as you could take over territories because, again, capitalism is based on growth. But when you conquer the entire planet and the entire world becomes one economic model, you have nowhere to grow. You have reached the limits of growth. And so think of these shareholders for these enormous, giant, gazillion corporations. They want their money, but they're not getting anything because there's nowhere to go. And so now they're fighting, there's infighting, they're fighting amongst themselves because this group who was part of the Bretton Woods, they're losing their weight and they're losing their prestige and they're losing their force. And so the other alternative group is actually taking advantage of the situation with which you're living in right now in the world to try to impose their model. And they simply pushed forward their candidate. That candidate is Donald Trump. They're two complete, and these two groups, they could never, agree to disagree because they're diametrically opposite ideas of how the world should be run, economically speaking, which is why they could never agree, okay? They could only kill each other. And that's why I said it's like in The Highlander. Only one of these groups can survive. And the war is not only in the United States. It's on a global level, which is why we see what we're seeing in the United States, we're seeing in Italy, we're seeing in Germany, we're seeing in France, we're seeing in Europe, we're seeing, you know, in the International Monetary, the World Bank, et cetera, et cetera. It's a global conflict between two economic models, which could never, ever have anything to do one with the other.
Okay, we're coming on a break. We've got about 30 seconds. Just yes or no, simple as possible. Is Donald Trump a figure America should be behind, red-blooded Americans?
Absolutely, absolutely, because this is the only way that the American economy can rise and be great again.
Whoa, my hair is blown back. Talking to Daniel during the break and what's at stake and what we're looking at. Basically, some kind of Marvel comic, all out, behind the scene, wrestle in the back room, syndicate type thing. This is serious, and this is only just about the whole economic future of our planet is at stake. I don't think that's too big a statement. Let's talk about these upcoming elections, Daniel, for at least for America. Let's focus on America right now. What about the censorship we're seeing? What about the elections? What is going on?
Well, again, it's easy to explain because, again, Trump's enemies are the mainstream media, the Silicon Valley, Hollywood, Wall Street, et cetera, et cetera. These are his enemies. So needless to say, you're going to see a lot of censorship because the only way that the liberal banking financier elite has to save their transnational empires is by getting rid of Donald Trump, and that's to be impeachment because they can't kill him. And the reason they can't kill him, the lone gunman thing doesn't exist in real life, okay? It exists in Hollywood films, but in real life it doesn't exist because to give an order to kill a president, it has to go way, 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 way up, you know, above president's pay grade. And unfortunately for the transnational banking financier elite, on the other side, people behind Donald Trump is the Queen of England and the Rothschilds. It doesn't really, and the Kabbalists. It doesn't really get much higher than that. So the problem for the banking elite is that they realize, that the bankers and the financiers realize, that they can only save their transnational empire if they put their candidate in the White House. And so this new president would then change the Federal Reserve policy by kickstarting the printing press that would supply enough dollars to support the banking sector, quantitative easing. And that was the goal, you know, for the Hillary Clinton nomination. So because with Clinton, you know, the system of quantitative easing, which means, you know, quantitatively easing and printing unlimited amount of cash, it would have continued for about another 6 to 8 months. And in that time, everything would have risen on the strength of the emissions. And about 8 months later, this money would have returned to the United States markets anyway, thus causing the enormous inflation, which would have resulted in the explosion of all the bubbles of the financial markets, basically dismantling the entire system. And that's why the liberal banking financier elite are pushing for global world war, because wars write off debts and responsibilities. Because you have no other way to write off $4 quadrillion debt. That's 4 and 15 zeros. And Donald Trump represents another scenario. He puts America's interests first, focusing on improving the economy, getting rid of this huge debt. So the liberal banking financiers, and I don't mean by that the Democrats, because I remind you that the Bushes voted with Clinton, which only goes to show you that what we're seeing right now is the entire edifice collapsing because all of these people, this whole thing of, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats, two sides of you know, the divide, ideologically speaking, it's all nonsense. They're all part of the same liberal model. That's why the Bushes voted with the Clintons, because they're part of the same model. But they need to get back to the White House because that's the only way they can get their grubby hands on the money, okay, and print, you know, their way to oblivion. And the only way they can do that is by impeaching Trump. But they won't be able to impeach Trump because they're going to need two-thirds vote in the Senate. And because of the third, I think this time around it's a third of the Senate is up for re-election, and most of the seats are Democrats, which means that they cannot gain, they can only lose. Which means if Trump wins, he wins in 2020 and dismantles and destroys the liberal banking financiers, which is why we're seeing right now they're throwing everything at Donald Trump because they realize they're down to their last bullet, literally. You know, that's why you have, Barack Obama is, you know, back at it. You have the Clintons. You have Al Gore is about, you know, to get in there as well. They have no choice. they have to throw everything at Donald Trump to try to win the elections, because their only way out of this hell, which they themselves created, is the impeachment, which they cannot have because they can't win the Senate.
The censorship, YouTube, we're seeing it, Facebook, all these corporate interests are now coming on the side, it seems, from what you certainly from what you said, on this banking side. Are you concerned about that, the censorship? Because it can really swing an election.
Well, censorship has always existed. I mean, I know it for a personal example. Anytime, you know, in the United States, my books are not published by Penguin or Random House, even though I've sold, you know, 7 million copies of Bilderberg, which is a lot of money for these corporate, you know, capitalist institutions. They don't want my book because it, you know, it shows people how things actually run, and which is, again, what do you call it? You call it censorship. They prefer not to make the money and, you know, to make sure that nobody gets to read my book. My books are not allowed to be printed in England, so that's censorship. So censorship has always been there. But the thing is, what Donald Trump has done, and again, people are saying, ah, so this guy is pro-Donald Trump. I cannot be pro-Donald Trump. I'm not American. I look at Donald Trump as a paleontologist would look at a dinosaur. I examine him, I smell him, I touch him, I say, what is this creature? Okay, and then I give my synopsis and my analysis. I'm not pro or against Donald Trump. But what is actually obvious is Donald Trump is basically responsible for bringing all this stuff, you know, this slime out into the open. And all this stuff, the pretense of, you know, of equality, of brotherhood, you know, of let's get along, let's debate, you know, let's be civilized, it's all gone out the window. The real, the masks are off, and these people are playing for keeps. And censorship is just part of this big game. They need to censor conservative voices because they realize, as I said before, they're down to their last out.
What does victory look like? Let's say Trump is able to accomplish his objectives, and let's say the other side. What does victory for each look like?
Well, basically, again, as I said, because Trump represents a different scenario, it puts America's interests first, focusing on improving the economy, getting rid of this huge debt, and to put it differently, Trump's plans are an attempt to save the U.S. economy at the expense of banks and financial system itself. And while Clinton, you know, she would have bailed out the banks at the expense of the U.S. economy and an increasing impoverishment of its citizens. So you'd be naive to think that these two groups can reach a consensus. In other words, the plans by Trump and Clinton, they're mutually exclusive. So if Trump goes through with his plans, it would wipe out those elite groups that stand behind Clinton. Wall Street, hedge funds, speculative financial interests, international, you know, banking institutions. Nobody's going to miss him anyway. What's 5 million bankers less in the world? Everybody's going to be happy, okay?
Whereas
Clinton's plan would endanger these forces because the U.S. economy is real sector that brought Trump to power. It's like, as I said again, in the movie Highlander, there's only one can survive. And because economy is, you know, the logic is 2 plus 2 is 4. I try to convince you it's not 4, it's 27, but it's not. I'll just give you a couple of numbers to give you an idea how bad things are. In the United States, the CIA Misery Index, which is a very important index nobody ever talks about, it's calculated based on a real inflation plus real unemployment, the real numbers, is today 32.89. As a comparison, the index during the darkest period of the Great Depression was 27. The Federal Reserve has $56 billion in cash and $20 or $21 trillion in debt. The Fed is leveraged at 77 to 1, and the U.S. debt to GDP is 330 or 40, whatever it is, percent. It's absolutely impossible to pay this off. You have 114 out of the top 500 Italian banks. They're bankrupt. Bankrupt. You're talking about world global bankruptcy and about $10 trillion of global debt, which is bonds, securities, derivatives, etc. They're negotiated and traded at negative interest rates. There's no way out of this thing unless you change a system, which is why Trump has one way out and the liberals have war as an alternative.